mournful voice. He is maybe 60 years old, give or take a couple of years, and for as long as I can remember, he is running a handbook over in 49th Street next door to a chop suey joint. In fact, Sorrowful is one of the biggest handbook makers in this town. Anytime you see him, he is generally by himself, because being by himself is not apt to cost him anything. And it is therefore a most surprising scene when he comes along Broadway with the little doll. And there is much speculation among the citizens as to how this comes about, for no one ever hears of Sorrowful having any family or relations of any kind, or even any friends. The little doll is a very little doll indeed. The top of her noggin not only coming up to Sorrowful's knee, although of course Sorrowful has very high knees at that. Moreover, she is a very pretty little doll with big blue eyes and fat pink cheeks and a lot of yellow curls hanging down her back, and she has fat little legs and quite a large smile, although Sorrowful is lugging her along the street so fast that half the time her feet are dragging the sidewalk and she has a license to be bawling instead of smiling. Sorrowful is looking sadder than somewhat, which makes his face practically heart-rending as he pulls up in front of Mindy's and motions us to follow him in. And anybody can see that he is worried about something very serious, and many citizens are figuring that maybe he suddenly discovers all his potatoes are counterfeit, because nobody can think of anything that'll worry Sorrowful except money. Anyway, four or five of us gather around the table where Sorrowful sits down with the little doll beside him, and he states a most surprising situation to us. It seems that early in the afternoon, a young guy who was playing the races with Sorrowful for several days pops into his place of business next door to the chop suey joint, leading the little doll, and this guy wishes to know how much time he has before post in the first race at Empire. Well, he only has about 25 minutes, and he seems very downhearted about this, because he explains to Sorrowful that he has a sure thing in this race, which he gets the night before off a guy who is a pal of a very close friend, a jockey workman's valet. The young guy says he is figuring to bet himself about a deuce on this sure thing, but he does not have such a sum as a deuce on him when he goes to bed. So he plans to get up bright and early in the morning and hop down to a spot on 14th Street where he knows a guy who will let him have the deuce. But it seems he oversleeps, and here it is almost post time, and it is too late for him to get to 14th Street and back before the race is run off, and it is all quite a sad story indeed. Although, of course, it does not make much impression on Sorrowful, as he is already sadder than somewhat himself just from thinking that somebody may beat him for a bet during the day, even though the races do not start anywhere as yet. Well, the young guy tells Sorrowful he is going to try to get to 14th Street and back in time to bet on the sure thing, because he says it'll be nothing short of a crime if he has to miss such a wonderful opportunity. But he says to Sorrowful, to make sure I do not miss, you take my marker for a deuce, and I will leave the kid here with you as security until I get back. Now, originally, asking Sorrowful to take a marker will be considered great foolishness, as it is well known to one and all that Sorrowful will not take a marker from Andrew Mellon. In fact, Sorrowful can almost break your heart telling you about the poorhouses that are full of bookmakers who take markers in their time. But it happens that business is just opening up for the day, and Sorrowful is pretty busy. And besides, the young guy is already a steady customer for several days and has an honest pan, and Sorrowful figures a guy is bound to take a little doll out of hock for a deuce. Furthermore, while Sorrowful does not know much about kids, he can see the little doll must be worth a deuce at least, and maybe more. He nods his head. And the young guy puts the little doll on a chair and goes tearing out of the joint to get the dough. Well, Sorrowful marks down a deuce bet on Cold Cuts, which is the name of the sure thing. Then he forgets all about the proposition for a while, and all the time, the little doll is sitting on the chair as quiet as a mouse, smiling at Sorrowful's customers, including the Chinese from the Chop Suey joint who come in now and then to play the races. Well, Cold Cuts blows, and in fact, is not even fifth. And along late in the afternoon, Sorrowful suddenly realizes that the young guy never shows up again, and that the little doll is still sitting in the chair, although she is now playing with a butcher knife, which one of the Chinese from the Chop Suey joint gives her to keep her amused. Finally, it comes on Sorrowful's closing time, and the little doll is still there. So he can think of nothing else to do in this situation but to bring her around to Mindy's and to get a little advice from different citizens, as he does not care to leave her in his place of business alone, as Sorrowful will not even trust anybody in there alone, not even himself. Well, now, Sorrowful says, after giving us this long spiel, what are we going to do about this proposition? Well, of course, up to this minute, none of the rest of us knew we are all being cut in on any proposition. And personally, I do not care for any part of it. But Big Nig, the crapshooter, speaks up as follows. Hey, this little doll is sitting in your joint all afternoon, Nig says. The best thing to do is right now to throw a feed into her, as the chances are her stomach thinks her throat is cut. Now, this seems to be a fair sort of an idea. So, Sorrowful orders up a couple of portions of ham hocks and sauerkraut, which is a very tasty dish in Mindy's at all times, and the little doll tears into it very enthusiastically, even using both hands, although a fat old doll who is sitting at the next table speaks up and says this is a terrible fodder to be tossing into a child at such an hour, and where is her mama?
Well, Big Nig says to the old doll, I hear many people getting a bust in the snoot for not minding their own business in this town. But you give off an idea at that. Listen, Big Nig says to the doll, where is your mama?
But the little doll does not seem to know. Or maybe she does not wish to make this information public because she only shakes her head and smiles at Big Nig as her mouth is too full of ham hocks and sauerkraut for her to talk.
What is your name?
Big Nig asks, and she says something that Big Nig claims sounds like Marky. Although, personally, I think she is trying to say Martha. Anyway, it is from this that she gets the name we always call her afterward, which is Marky.
It is a good moniker, Big Nig says. It is short for marker, and she is certainly a marker, unless Sorrowful is telling us a big, large lie. Why... This is a very cute little doll at that, and very smart.
How old are you, Marky?
She only shakes her head again. So Regret, the horse player, who claims he can tell how old a horse is by its teeth, reaches over and sticks his finger in her mouth to get a peek at her crockery. But she seems to think Regret's finger is a big hunk of ham hock and shuts down on it so hard Regret lets out an awful squawk. But... he says that before she tries to cripple him for life, he sees enough of her teeth to convince him that she is maybe 3, rising 4, and this seems reasonable at that. Anyway, she can't be much older. Well, about this time, a guinea with a horror hand organ stops out in front of Mindy's and begins grinding out a tune while his ever-loving wife is passing a tambourine around among the citizens on the sidewalk. And on hearing this music, Marky slides off of her chair with her mouth still full of ham hocks and sauerkraut, which she swallows so fast she almost chokes. And then she speaks as follows. Marky, dance, she says. Then she begins hopping and skipping around among the tables, holding her little short skirt up in her hands and showing a pair of white panties underneath. Pretty soon, Mindy himself comes along and starts putting up a beef about making a dance hall out of his joint.
But a guy by the name of Sleepout, who was watching Marky with much interest, offers to bounce a sugar bowl off Mindy's noggin if he does not mind his own business. So Mindy goes away, but he keeps muttering about the white panties being a most immodest spectacle. Which, of course, is great nonsense, as many dolls older than Marky are known to do dances in Mindy's, especially on the late watch, when they stop by for a snack on their way home from the nightclubs and the speaks, and I hear some of them do not always wear white panties either. Personally, I find Marky's dancing very much. I like your dancing very much, although, of course, she is no Pavlova. And finally, she trips over her own feet and falls on her snoot. But she gets up smiling and climbs back on her chair. And pretty soon, she is sound asleep with her head against Sorrowful. Well, now this is much discussion about what Sorrowful ought to do at this point. Some claim he ought to take her to a police station, and others say the best thing to do is to put an ad in the lost and found columns of the morning bladders, the same as people do when they find Angora cats and Pekingese and other animals which they do not wish to keep. But none of these ideas seem to appeal to Sorrowful. Finally, he says he will take her to his own home and let her sleep there while he is deciding what it is to be done about her. So, Sorrowful takes Marky in his arms and lugs her over to a flea bag in West 49th Street, where he has a room for many years. And afterwards, a bellhop tells me Sorrowful sits up all night watching her while she is sleeping. Now, what happens but Sorrowful takes on a great fondness for the little doll, which is most surprising, as Sorrowful has never before fallen to anybody or anything, and after he has his overnight, he cannot bear the idea of giving her up. Personally, I will just as soon have a 3-year-old baby wolf around me as a little doll such as this, but Sorrowful thinks she is the greatest thing that ever happens. He has a few inquiries made around and about to see if he can find out who she belongs to, and he is tickled silly when nothing comes of these inquiries, although nobody else figures anything will come of them anyway, as it is by no means uncommon in this town for little kids to be left sitting in chairs or on doorsteps to be chucked into an orphan's asylum by whoever finds them. Anyway, Sorrowful says he is going to keep Marky, and his attitude causes great surprise, as keeping Marky is bound to be an expense, and it does not seem reasonable that Sorrowful will go to any expense for anything. When it commences to look as if he means what he says, many citizens naturally figure there must be an angle, and soon there are a great many rumors on the subject. Of course, one of these rumors is that the chances are Marky is Sorrowful's own offspring, which is tossed back on him by the wronged mama. But this rumor is started by a guy who does not know Sorrowful. And after he gets a gander at Sorrowful, the guy apologizes, saying that he realizes that he no wrong mama would ever be daft enough to permit herself to be wronged by Sorrowful. Personally, I always say that if Sorrowful wishes to keep Marky, it is his own business. And most of the citizens around Mindy's agree with me. But the trouble is Sorrowful at once cuts everybody else in on the management of Marky. And the way he talks to citizens around Marky's about her, around Mindy's about her, you will think that we are all personally responsible for, as most of the citizens around Mindy's are bachelors, or are wishing they are bachelors, it is most inconvenient to them to suddenly find themselves with a family. Some of us try to explain to Sorrowful that if he is going to keep Marky, it is up to him to handle all her play. But right away, Sorrowful starts talking so sad about all his pals deserting him and Marky just when they need the most that it softens all hearts, although up to that time we were about as pally with Sorrowful as a burglar with a copper. Finally, every night in Mindy's is meeting night for a committee to decide something or other about Marky. The first thing we decide is that the flea bag where Sorrowful lives is no place for Marky, So, Sorrowful hires a big apartment in one of the swellest joints on West 59th Street, overlooking Central Park, and spends plenty of potatoes furnishing it. Although up to this time, Sorrowful never sets himself back more than about 10 bobs per week for a place to live and considers it extravagant at that. I hear it costs him 5 G's to fix up Marky's bedroom alone, not counting the solid gold toilet set that he buys for her. Then he gets her an automobile and has to hire a guy to drive it for her. And finally, when we explain to Sorrowful that it does not look right for Marky to be living with nobody but him and a chauffeur, Sorrowful hires a French doll with bobbed hair and red cheeks and the name of Mademoiselle Fifi as a nurse for Marky. And this seems to be quite a sensible move, as it ensures Marky plenty of company. In fact, up to the time that Sorrowful hires Mademoiselle Fifi, many citizens are commencing to consider Marky something of a nuisance and are playing the duck for her and Sorrowful. But after Mademoiselle Fifi comes along, you can scarcely get in Sorrowful's joint of 59th Street or around his table at Mindy's when he brings Marky and Mademoiselle Fifi in to eat. But one night, Sorrowful goes home early and catches sleep out, guzzling Mademoiselle Fifi. And Sorrowful makes Mademoiselle Fifi take a plenty of breeze, claiming she will set a bad example for Marky. Then he gets an old tomato by the name of Mrs. Clancy to be Marky's nurse. And while there is no doubt Mrs. Clancy is a better nurse than Mademoiselle Fifi, and there is practically no danger of her setting Marky a bad example, the play at Sorrowful's joint is by no means as brisk as formerly. You can see that from being closer than a dead heat with his potatoes, Sorrowful becomes as loose as ashes. He not only spends plenty on Marky, but he starts picking up checks in Mindy's and other spots. And although up to this time, picking up checks is something that is most repulsive to Sorrowful, he gets so he will hold still for a bite, if the bite is not too savage. And what is more, a great change comes over his kisser. It is no longer so sad and mean-looking, and in fact, it is almost a pleasant sight at times, especially as Sorrowful gets so he smiles now and then and has a big hello for one and all, and everybody says the mayor ought to give Marky a medal for bringing about such a wonderful change. Now, Sorrowful is so fond of Marky that he wants her with him all the time. And by, there is much criticism of him for having her around his hambook joint among the Chinese and the horse players, and especially the horse players, and for taking her around nightclubs and keeping her out at all hours, as some people do not consider this a proper upbringing for a little doll. We hold a meeting in Mindy's on this proposition one night, and we get Sorrowful to agree to keep Marky out of his joint. But we know Marky is so fond of nightclubs, especially where there is music, that it seems a sin and a shame to deprive her of this pleasure altogether. So we finally compromise by letting Sorrowful take her out one night a week to the Hot Box in 54th Street, which is only a few blocks from where Marky lives, and Sorrowful can get her home fairly early. In fact, after this, Sorrowful keeps her out no any later than 2 a.m. The reason Marky likes nightclubs, where there is music, is because she can do her dance there, as Marky is practically daffy on the subject of dancing, especially by herself, even though she never seems to be able to get over winding up by falling on her snoot, which many citizens consider a very artistic finish at that. The Choo Choo Boys band in the Hot Box always play a special number for Marky in between the regular dances, and she gets plenty of applause, especially from the Broadway citizens who know her, although Henry, the manager of the Hot Box, once tells me he will just as soon Marky does not do her dance in there, because one night, several of the best customers from Park Avenue, including two millionaires and two old dolls who do not understand Marky's dancing, burst out laughing when she falls on her snoot. And Big Nig puts the slug on the guys and is trying to put the slug on the old dolls, too, when he is finally headed off. Now, one cold, snowy night, many citizens are sitting around the tables in the Hot Box speaking of one thing and another and having a few drams when Sorrowful drops in on his way home. For Sorrowful has now become a guy who is around and about and in and out, and he does not have Marky with him, as it is not her night out and she is home with Mrs. Clancy. A few minutes after Sorrowful arrives, a party by the name of Milk Ear Willie from the West Side comes in. This Milk Ear Willie being a party who is once a prize fighter and who has a milk ear, which is the reason he is called Milk Ear Willie, and is known to carry a John Roscoe in his pants pocket. Furthermore, it is well known that he knocks off several guys in his time, so he is considered rather a suspicious character. It seems that the reason he comes into the Hot Box is to shoot Sorrowful full of little holes, because he has a dispute with Sorrowful about a parlay on the races the day before, and the chances are Sorrowful will now be very dead if he does not happen that just as Milk Ear outs with his old equalizer and starts taking dead aim at Sorrowful from a table across the room. Well, who pops in the joint but Marky? She is in a long nightgown that keeps getting tangled up in her bare feet as she runs across the dance floor and jumps into Sorrowful's arms. So, if Milk Ear Willie lets go at this time, he is apt to put a slug in Marky, and this is by no means Willie's intention. So Willie puts his rod back in his kick, but he is greatly disgusted and stops as he is going out and makes a large complaint to Henri about allowing children in a nightclub. Well, Sorrowful does not learn until afterwards how Marky saves his life, as he is too much horrified over her coming four or five blocks through the snow, barefooted, to think of anything else. And everybody present is also horrified and wondering how Marky finds her way there. But Marky does not seem to have any good explanation for her conduct, except that she wakes up and discovers Mrs. Clancy asleep and gets to feeling lonesome for Sorrowful. About this time, the choo-choo boys start playing Marky's tune, and she slips out of Sorrowful's arms and runs out on the dance floor. "Marky, dance," she says. And then she lifts her nightgown in her hands and starts hopping and skipping about the floor until Sorrowful collects her in his arms again and wraps her in an overcoat and takes her home. Now what happens? But the next day, Marky is sick from being out in the snow barefooted, and with nothing on but her nightgown. And by night she is very sick indeed, and it seems that she has pneumonia. So Sorrowful takes her to the clinic hospital, and hires two nurses and two croakers, and wishes to hire more, only they tell him this will do for the present. The next day Marky is no better, and the next night she's worse. And the management of the clinic is very much upset because it has no place to put all the baskets of fruit and candy and floral horseshoes and crates of dolls and toys that keep arriving every few minutes. Furthermore, the management by no means approves of the citizens who are tiptoeing along the hallway on the floor where Marky has her room, especially such as Big Nig and Sleep Out and Wop Joey and the Pale-Faced Kid and Guinea Mike and many other prominent citizens, especially as these characters keep trying to date up the noises. Of course, I can see the management's point of view, but I wish to say that no visitor to the clinic ever brings more joy and cheer to the patients than Sleep Out, as he goes calling in all the private rooms and wards to say a few pleasant words or two to the inmates. And I never take any stock in the rumor that he is looking around to see if there's anything worth picking up. In fact, an old doll from the Rockville Center who is suffering from yellow jaundice puts up an awful holler when Sleep Out is heaved from her room because she says he is right in the middle of a story about a traveling salesman, and she wishes to learn what happens.
There are so many prominent characters in and around the clinic that the mourning bladders finally get the idea that some well-known mob guy must be in the hospital full of slugs. And by, the reporters come buzzing around to see what is what. Naturally, they find out that all this interest is in nothing but a little doll. And while you will naturally think that such a little doll as Marky can scarcely be worth the attention of the reporters, it seems they get more heated up over her when they hear the story than if she is Jack Diamond. In fact, the next day, all the bladders have large stories about Marky and also about Sorrowful. And about how all these prominent characters of Broadway are hanging around the clinic on her account. Moreover, one story tells about Sleepout entertaining the other patients in the hospital, and it makes Sleepout sound like a very large-hearted guy. It is maybe 3 o'clock on the morning of the fourth day Marky is in the hospital that Sorrowful comes into Mindy's, looking very sad indeed. He orders a sturgeon sandwich on pumpernickel, and then he explains that Marky seems to be getting worse by the minute, and that he does not think his doctors are doing her any good. And at this, Big Nig, the crapshooter, speaks up and says, "Well," Big Nig says, "if we ain't able to get Doc Bierfeld, the great pneumonia specialist, the chances are he will cure Marky like breaking sticks." "But of course," Nig says, "it's impossible to get Doc Bierfeld unless you are somebody like John D. Rockefeller or maybe the president." Well, naturally, everybody knows that what Big Nig says is very true, for Doc Bierfeld is the biggest croaker in this town. But no ordinary guy can get close enough to Doc Bierfeld to hand him a ripe peach, let alone get him to go out on a case. He is an old guy, and he does not practice much anymore. And then only among a few very rich and influential people. Furthermore, he has plenty of potatoes himself, so money does not interest him whatever. And anyway, it is a great foolishness to be talking about getting Doc Bierfeld out at such an hour as this." "Who do we know who knows Doc Bierfeld?" Sorrowful says. "Who can we call up who may have influence enough with him to get him to come just look at Marky?" "I will pay any price," he says. "Think of somebody," he says. Well, we are trying to think who comes in but Milk Ear Willie, and he comes in to toss a few slugs at Sorrowful. But before Milk Ear can start blasting, Sleepout sees him and jumps up and takes him off to a corner table and starts whispering in Milk Ear's good ear. As Sleepout talks to him, Milk Ear looks at Sorrowful in great surprise, and finally he begins nodding his head, and by he gets up and goes out of the joint in a hurry. Well, Sleepout comes back to our table and says like this.
"Well," Sleepout says, "let us stroll over to the clinic. I just sent Milk Ear Willie to Doc Bierfeld's house on Park Avenue to get the old Doc and bring him to the hospital. But Sorrowful, if he gets him, you must pay Willie the parlay you disputed with him, whatever it is. The chances are," Sleepout says, "Willie is right. I remember you once out-argued me on a parlay when I know I am right."
Now, personally, I consider Sleepout's talk about sending Milk Ear Willie after Doc Bierfeld just so much nonsense. And so does everybody else. But we figure maybe Sleepout is trying to raise Sorrowful's hopes. And anyway, he keeps Milk Ear from tossing these slugs at Sorrowful, which everybody considers very thoughtful of Sleepout, at least. Especially as Sorrowful is under too great a strain to be dodging slugs just now. About a dozen of us walk over to the clinic, and most of us stand around the lobby on the ground floor, although Sorrowful goes up to Marky's floor to wait outside her door. He is waiting there from the time she is first taken to the hospital, never leaving except to go over to Mindy's once in a while to get something to eat, and occasionally they open the door to let her look him in and get a peek at Marky. Well, it is maybe 6 o'clock when we hear a taxi stop outside the hospital, and pretty soon in comes Milk Ear Willie with another character from the West Side by the name of Fats Feinstein, who is well known to one and all as a great friend of Willie's. And in between them, there have a little old guy with a Van Dyke beard who does not seem to have on anything much but a silk dressing gown and who seems somewhat agitated, especially as Milkier Willie and Fats Feinstein keep prodding him from behind. Now it comes out that this little old guy is nobody but Doc Bierfeldt, the great pneumonia specialist. Personally, I never see a madder guy, although I wish to say I never blame him much for being mad when I learn how Milkier Willie and Fats Feinstein boff his butler over the noggin when he answers their ring, and how they walk him and they walk right into old Bierfeldt's bedroom and haul him out of the hay at the point of their Roscoe's and make him go with them. In fact, I consider such treatment most discourteous to a prominent croaker, and if I am Doc Bierfeldt, I will start hollowing copper as soon as I hit the hospital. And for all I know, maybe Doc Bierfeldt has just such an idea. But as Milkier Willie and Fats Feinstein haul him into the lobby, who comes downstairs but Sorrowful? And the minute Sorrowful sees Doc Bierfeldt, he rushes up to him and says like this, "Oh, Doc," Sorrowful says, "do something for my little girl. She's dying, Doc." He says, "Just a little bit of a girl, Doc. Her name is Marky. I am only a gambler, Doc. I do not mean anything to you or to anybody else, but please, save the little girl." Well, old Doc Bierfeldt sticks out his Van Dyke beard and looks at Sorrowful a minute, and he can see there are large tears in old Sorrowful's eyes, and for all I know, maybe the doc knows it has been many and many a year since there are tears in these eyes at that. Then the doc looks at Milkier Willie and Fats Feinstein and the rest of us, and at the nurses and the interns who are commencing to come running up from every which way. Finally, he speaks as follows. "What is this?" he says. "A child? A little child? Why, I am under the impression that these gorillas are kidnapping me to attend to some other sick or wounded gorilla. A child? This is quite different. Why do you not say so in the first place? Where is the child?" Doc Bierfeldt says. And he says, "Somebody get me some pants." We all follow him upstairs to the door of Marky's room. And we wait outside when he goes in, and we wait there for hours, because it seems that even old Doc Bierfeldt cannot think of anything to do in this situation, no matter how he tries. And along towards 10:30 in the morning, he opens the door very quiet and motions Sorrowful to come in, and then he motions all the rest of us to follow, shaking his head, very sad. There are so many of us that we fill the room around a little high, narrow bed on which Marky is lying like a flower against the white wall, her yellow curls spread out over her pillow. Old Sorrowful drops on his knees beside the bed, and his shoulders have heaved quite some as he kneels there, and I can hear Sleepout sniffling as if he has a cold in his head. Marky seems to be asleep when we go in, but while we are standing around the bed, looking down at her, she opens her eyes and seems to see us. And what is more, she seems to know us, because she smiles at each guy in turn and then tries to hold out one of her little hands to Sorrowful. Now, very faint, like from very far away, comes the sound of music through a half-open window in the room from a jazz band that is rehearsing in a hall just up the street from the hospital. And Marky hears this music because she holds up her head in such a way that anybody can see she's listening. And then she smiles again at us and whispers very plain as follows, "Marky, dance." And she tries to reach down as if to pick up her skirt, and as she does when she dances, but her hands fall across her breast as soft and white and light as snowflakes. And Marky never again dances in this world. Well, old Doc Bierfeldt and the nurses make us go outside at once, and while we are standing there in the hall outside the door, saying nothing whatever, a young guy and two dolls, one of them old and the other one not so old, come along the hall much excited. The young guy seems to know Sorrowful, who is sitting down again in his chair just outside the door, because he rushes up to Sorrowful and says to him, "Where is she?" he says. "Where's my darling child? You remember me," he says. I leave my little girl with you one day while I go on an errand, and while I'm on this errand, everything goes blank, and I wind up back in my home in Indianapolis with my mother and sister here, and recall nothing about where I leave my little girl or anything else. The poor boy has an amnesia, the old doll says. The stories that he deliberately abandons his wife in Paris and his child in New York are untrue. Yes, the doll who is not so old puts it. If we do not see the stories in the newspaper about how you have the child in this hospital, we may never know where she is. But everything is all right now, of course. We approve of Harold's marriage to a person of the stage, and we only recently learned of her death in Paris soon after their separation there, and are very sorry. But everything's all right now. We'll take full charge of the child. Now, all this gab is going on, Sorrowful never glances at him. He's just sitting there looking at Marky's door, and now as he's looking at the door, a very strange thing happens to his kisser. For all of a sudden, he becomes the sad-looking, mean guy kisser that it is in the days before he ever sees Marky. And furthermore, it is never again anything else. We'll be rich, the young guy says. We just learned that my darling child will be the sole heiress to her maternal grandpapa's fortune. And the old guy is only a hop ahead of the undertaker right now. I suppose I owe you something. And then Sorrowful gets up off his chair and looks at the guy and at the two dolls and speaks as follows. Yes, you owe me a $2 marker for the bet you blow on cold cuts. And, he says, I will trouble you to send it to me at once so I can wipe you off my books. Now he walks down the hall and out of the hospital, never looking back again. And there is a very great silence behind him that is broken only by the sniffling of sleep out and by some first-class sobbing from some of the rest of us. And I remember now that the guy who is doing the best job of sobbing is nobody but Milky or Willie. We have been reading Little Miss Marker, a short story by Damon Runyon, which was later used as the basis of the movie that was Shirley Temple's very first starring role. I was asking my friend, the film critic, Doug Holm, because I hadn't remembered how the movie ended. I said, did Shirley Temple's character die at the end of Little Miss Marker, like in the short story? And he not only said no way, he said no effing way. So this has been Gremlin Time. We're going to have some music here. Joe Woods, I think I let him in somewhere. Or maybe he used the pent entrance. I don't know. He's around here somewhere. We'll be getting to him. Let me see here. Thank you.
But it wouldn't be big belief if you believed in me. Yes, it's only a canvas sky hanging over a muslin tree. But it wouldn't be big belief if you believed in me. Without your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love, it's a melody played in a penny arcade. It's a Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But then it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
As a king, feeling good and everything, just like a bird in the spring. Gotta let it out, it's my sweetie, can't you guess? Wild about him, I'll confess. Does he love me? That's why I shout.
Everybody loves my baby, but my baby don't love nobody but me. Nobody but me. Now everybody wants my baby, but my baby don't want nobody but me. That's plain to see. But a dun 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 dun. That's why everybody loves my baby, but my baby don't love nobody but me. Nobody but me. Oh.
Yes, sucker dur, 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 sucker dur.
Thank you.
Album Hot Jazz on Blue Note. This is like Art Hody, James B. Johnson. Oh, this is an amazing lineup. This has been Gremlin Time. Stay tuned for the Tiki Cha Cha Club on your favorite community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Stay tuned for the Tiki Cha Cha Club.
They better start the show rolling.
Ole, ole, it's show time.
In the tiki 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 room, in the tiki 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 room,
all the birds sing words and the flowers croon.
In the tiki 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 room.
Welcome to our tropical hideaway, you lucky people, you. If we weren't in the show starting right away, we'd sing the audience too.
All together in the tiki 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 room, in the tiki 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 room.
All the birds sing word and the flowers croon
in the tiki 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 room.
Our magnificent production is yet to come. So strum the guitar and beat the drum. We've been a hit and we know you adore us. So come on and join us in another chorus.
In the tiki 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 room. In the tiki 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 room.
All the birds sing words and the flowers croon.
In the tiki 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 room.
Oh, it's a load up.
In the tiki 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 room. All the birds sing words and the flowers croon.
Taking you to faraway places and bringing them home to you. This is the Tiki Cha Cha Club, where the Cocktail Nation meets Exotica at the corner of Kalakaua Boulevard and Bourbon Street in a little Spanish village, a small discotheque on the Isle of Capri.
Thank you. Get me here. Mother. A secret rendezvous. Right here at 90.7 FM stereo. A rendezvous for two. You and me. And you make three. At the wacky cha-cha club. No, I mean it's the... Yeah, right. It's the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. Taking you to faraway places and bringing them home to you every Monday night right here at KBOO Portland's Community Radio. More beautiful music, the beautiful music for the beautiful people who listen to, yeah, you got it, the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. A special spotlight on Henry Mancini, the soundtrack to the motion picture Two for the Road. Yes, that's Two for the Road.